Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new mini-series called Scientists in Tech for DTNS. I'm Dr. Nikki Ackermans, and today I talk to Dilşad Daktekin, a Turkish biologist who's working on the effects of seasons on wildlife populations. She uses statistics to create population models with Bayesian framework and hope to contribute to conservation policies. So, Dilşad, welcome to the show, and just give a general background, your name, your qualifications, and why you're such an awesome scientist.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. I'm Dilşad. I'm a Turkish scientist currently doing my PhD in Switzerland and University of Zurich. I trained as a molecular biologist, but then I decided I'm not super good in laboratories and molecular stuff or not super interested in them. Decided to move on to ecology. And now I'm doing mostly population models to check the fate of wildlife populations. In particular, I'm interested in seasonality because of climate crisis, basically.
Oh, fun stuff. Yeah. What kind of animal populations are you surveying?
So right now I have, to be honest, 13 species.
Wow.
But I am analyzing them in its batches. So 11 of them are large mammals in Turkey. So I'm trying to also single species analyzes, also all of them together as multi-species analyzes. Then I have Aldabra giant tortoises, I think at some point. And I also have gray mouse lemurs from Madagascar, which is actually the most interesting data I have because we know, like, we can tag them and we know who they are. Like, we have IDs on them. So it's
because they're cute also.
They're also super cute and they can fit in a cup. So anything fit in a cup is really cute.
But the tortoises, they're not that hard to track, no?
I mean, their home range is really small. So yeah. I'm sure you can find the same individual next day, the same place. So
they don't move very much, so it's not so interesting, maybe. So how do you collect this data? Do you go on person? Do you, like, you know, follow them around all day? What do you do?
So for Turkey data, for the large mammals in Turkey, we have
what animals are these, like bears and wolves and
we have like general European species, I would say bears, lynx, wolf, fox, red deer, roe deer, hare, wild boar.
Okay,
probably I'm missing some in the middle, but yeah, generally the idea is general European species, I would say. There's nothing like uniquely from Turkey.
Okay.
And for them, we have camera traps in the forest. These are cameras in some protective case. They're a little bit more different than usual cameras because they have like their either heat sensors or motion sensors.
And they use both, or it depends on the camera?
It depends on the camera too. So it depends on what you want to see too. So we are using the motion sensors and they're like active all the time. But they only capture image if something moves in front of them.
And also at night?
Also at night, yeah.
So they have
and of course, the quality increases with the price of the camera. So again, depends on what you want to get out of it. If you just want to know which animal passed there, or if any animal passed there, the cheap one will be also like fine. It will show you something passed there.
Okay. So, the fancier ones, you can see maybe different individuals because you have higher quality imagery.
You can see more background sometimes at night, for example. Also, it is also possible, depending on the species, you can detect individuals, like give them names and IDs, but then you really need to have like really good quality suits. So you can see some, like they do with tigers, for example, in India. So you can see tiger patterns because each of them have different patterns. So they know, oh, this is tiger A or tiger B. But for them, I think they're using a little bit more better cameras because they need to see the pattern each time.
Sure. What would the heat sensing ones do? The same thing, just...
Like it's mostly for night, I would say.
Okay.
If it,
okay.
Like to see the animals. It's like the night goggles, you know?
Okay. So those are for the Turkish ones. And what about the like tortoises and the lemurs? Are they also camera traps?
Tortoises, I mean, I still did not see the data. It's actually University of Zurich's project. All of these, I should say, they are collaborator projects. They're not my data and not my projects. Also, Turkish ones, we are collaborating with two awesome scientists in Turkey. I'm just analyzing the data. The Aldabra one, also University of Zurich's project with Seychelles Island Foundation.
Wow.
There, it's not super technical. They do just, they have transects in the islands and they just go there every day or...
So transect is a specific like square of ground, like what,
it's
2 meters long? A road, okay.
It's like a path. It depends on like, I think on average it was from 1 kilometer to 3 kilometers. They have multiple paths like in different islands in the like in the Aldabra atoll. So they go there regularly and just count all the tortoises they see.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
That's such a fun job.
Yeah, true. And for mouse lemurs, that's also a collaboration with German Primate Center and University of Göttingen. So Germans have a research center in Madagascar since 94, I guess.
Okay.
And they are collecting this data since then as well. For that, we trap the gray mouse lemurs. They are like really small. You saw their pictures before. It's like they're 60 grams or something like this much. So that's why we use a kind of trap called Sherman traps. They're basically like a rectangular box and it has a mechanism. We put like bait in it. Usually it's like, banana. You put some banana in there, they go in there, and when they go deep enough, there's a mechanism that triggers and door just shuts down on them.
Oh, and they get stuck.
You don't kill them. They're just trapped inside for like a couple hours.
Okay.
So we trap like that, and then we bring it back to the research station, so the people I work with, they are either primatologists or behavioral ecologists. So they are interested in much more other stuff than I do. I just want to catch and relieve them. Mm-hmm. So they take some measurements for primatologists, like the canine and the skull and everything, mm-hmm. tail, the body size, body weight, everything. We do them and we put like a chip inside of them.
Like a microchip, like with the cats and dogs.
Yes,
not exactly. Not a 5G.
No, definitely not like okay. that. It's like a microchip. It's like a mechanism is like you inject something in it and just under the skin, it stays there forever.
I think they're RFID based, right?
Yes, I think so too. And then there's like a remote control type of thing that you can read the chip again if you catch an individual so that you know, oh, this is, Lucy or whatever. So, we don't name them, but they have code names. that's it. And then we release them back. That's that technique called mark recapture technique. Sure. It's pretty good. And I mean, most of ecologists know that even if they don't do population ecology, it's pretty good to like, basically we're sampling, like taking a sample from the whole population instead of catching the whole population to count them.
Which they used to do back in the day.
Definitely. And you can never count like, catch all the population anyway. And this helps you to do like an extrapolation based on the sample you have and some error margin. And with that, since it's individual data and you know each individual, you can also come with like survival analysis or sometimes recruitment or fecundity analysis. So you can actually also check environmental effects or other effects on the survival of this species in that region. It gives you a little bit more in detail, in depth knowledge, because data is in detail as well.
So speaking of the data, you said you work mostly on the data analysis.
Yes.
So very broadly, first of all, what's the main goal and like, how does this work? And then how do you narrow it down? And what kind of like software do you use too?
My main goal is just to check actually seasonality effects, which means changes in seasons. Because since climate crisis is happening, the transitions of seasons are changing to either timing or either the intensity of the seasons, they are changing. And of course, like a lot of animals are depending on seasons for their breeding or for their foraging, anything, right? Life cycle is depending on it. And that's why they're in sync with these seasons and transitions. But it's changing. And we want to know how animals are going to react to that or what any wild species is going to react to that so that, if possible, we might come with some really good conservation solutions to protect them. Mm-hmm. Also for us to know, like, to understand if they're going to adapt or what's going to happen, basically.
Yeah.
You are really restricted with the data with that my project is actually good because I can check any type of data. So we have right now, I mentioned three data sets. The one of them, large mammals, are only presence, absence. So only thing I had is ones or zeros.
So like, say it's February, they're there. And in March, they're not there. That's the data you're working with.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And this is like for every species we have there. And then for Aldabra, it's the count data for the tortoises.
Okay.
So it's a little bit more. I mean, they are like super similar with presence, absence, but you can also go a little bit more in detail because you know a little bit more amount,
okay.
For population size-wise.
Yeah, sure.
And for the mouse simmers, we call it individual-based data. That's the more most in-depth data we have. So that's the perfect one. So I'm not really comparing them in my thesis, but it's good to work with all of them. And that's why I need to apply different type of models to all of them because I can learn much more from the green mouse state, not lemur data than the large mammal data and check the seasonality effects for all of them. And for that, I'm using R.
Yeah. So this is a statistical analysis software called R that is open source, actually, which is great.
Yeah, it is open source.
Us.
It's like it has really big community. It's really like I'm doing everything by Googling as well. So it's pretty cool.
Same.
But since I like a challenge, I'm using Bayesian statistics than frequentist statistics, which means I get to write my own models in an algebraic language, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm using R to run that, like to make that work. So I'm using R as an engine, but I am designing my own models, basically.
How does one design a Bayesian statistics model, Dissad?
So
I'm asking because I actually don't know. I don't do that stuff. It's way too complicated for me.
I mean, to be honest, I also did not know before my PhD at all.
That's
I
what never a PhD heard is it for.
Definitely. So that's why I'm not like a statistician. Disclaimer, I'm not a statistician. I'm trained as a biologist. I learned every statistics I have by myself, which can be wrong or just like by doing it.
But
in my first year, I like read this about this crazy. So Bayesian is like, basically, it's not that different. And statistics is the same. The mechanism behind it is mathematics, and it's the same with mm-hmm. the normal frequent displays. It just, with Bayesian, instead of the point estimates from any statistics or a point one result, you get a distribution. So you have a probability of different results.
So if we can put that in our mind, it's like instead of your one tortoise that's there or not there, you get more of like a probability going to be there? No?
Yeah, kind of something like that. For example, frequentist gives me, let's say, one tortoise is at point A at time T, like for 60% of the time, mm-hmm. let's say 0.6. But then Bayesian gives me, it can be from 0.3 to, this is not a confidence interval thing. There's also the confidence interval, but it mm-hmm. gives me from 0.3 to 0.8. But frequency of the 0.3 is lower than the 0.6 okay. in the results. So that it gives me, it can be 0.3, it can be 0.8, but probably it is like 0.6. So it's higher probability okay. that it is 0.6. So this means I get to account for all the uncertainties I have, like either from the data, either from data collection, either from environmental covariates I'm using, or the models itself.
So what kind of examples of these variations can mess with your data?
All of them can mess with my data, but mostly
like,
it's
about really stormy on the specific collection week that you went to Madagascar and that screwed up the data or.
Sure. The problem is, the most problems are two things. One, data collection, because it
people.
Can mess up like, either people or a species itself. It can be a really hard species to catch. So you don't know how to work around it. Or the other uncertainty part would be the model itself, because it always has a margin of error, right? Mm-hmm. So it will never give you the exact, sure, 100% result. Any model.
Yeah.
There's no model in the world.
Because
that does
that's
that.
Why it's a model. It's not a.
Definitely.
Magic.
It's not the reality.
Yeah.
So that's why you need to account for that too. So Bayesian makes it possible that you can account for these uncertainties a little bit well. And on top of that, it's since you get to write your own model mm-hmm. instead of using this packages or boxed or like already prepared other software stuff, you can change whatever you want. So, for example, if you think you have an observer effect during data collection, mm-hmm. you can account that in your model by
meaning that different observers record data differently.
Definitely. Okay. So that you get to see like observer A or observer B has a difference, or is this the thing that messing up with your results, for example? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty flexible. Yeah, I needed to learn a little bit mathematical reading for that, which I never had before. But right now, I mean, it's really nice that once you actually get it, it's really nice to use. And it's really hard to go back to the other ways because now you have like 100% freedom, basically.
You feel really smart and you code on your computer, like in the movies, like...
Yeah, I get to like kind of show off by that to my other friends who are doing biology, but not Bayesian sometimes.
You turn off the lights and you put a projector on the wall with numbers.
Yeah, it's a lot of, it looks like a lot. I'm doing some metrics stuff, but actually it's just, I don't know. It's just like really a binomial distribution, which is like not that complicated.
Yeah. And so what kind of results come out of these models that you created then? What are you able to tell from your models in the end?
Again, depends on the data and the model you're using. But right now, from the I only analyzed the large mammals and I just started analyzing gray mouse lemurs right now. Mm-hmm. I did not see Aldabra data yet, so it will come to that at some
Fingers
point.
Fingers crossed.
Yes. For large mammals, I was checking, since I only had presence and absence data, I was checking habitat use. So mm-hmm. literally... what's the percentage of being like for that species being at that point at that time. Mm-hmm. And I gave seasons like as winter and summer. And I was checking, is this changing from winter to summer and summer to winter transitions? And I get to check if they are colonizing an empty habitat in these transitions or if they're leaving a habitat where they already are in the next season, things like that. And it gives me an idea of their habitat use and is this changing through seasons so we can know about the forestry practices around. So how to do them or like basically make some recommendations on it. Because mm-hmm. most of the current conservation policies, at least in Turkey, and I think in most places too, usually focus on one species, let's say gray wolf or deer or bear in one area. But I think it should not do that because even if the gray wolf does not have seasonality, roe deer might have it, which gray wolf actually like interacts a lot and because it's a prey. So I'm trying to force on that. So I'm trying to say that those policies should not focus on one species, but just take entire community because there's a lot of variation mm-hmm. between species as well. I also did some multi-species analysis, which I checked prey effect on the predators. I used wolf and lynx as predators. Mm-hmm. And it did also show, for example, from the single species of the wolf, it literally did not care about seasons because they're pretty resistant to anything. Mm-hmm. So they were just not showing any seasonality or habitat use was not changing in my results. But when I did a multi-species analysis with the roe deer effect on wolf, it was changing because roe deers was changing.
They're the ones who change. Okay.
It was showing a lot more like dependence on the prey.
That's
so
really
I'm trying
cool.
to force that. Yeah, it is cool. I really hope some journals will think like that too. So.
Hint, hint. Nature, hint, if you're listening. over how many years was this measured?
Camera trap data. They started in 2007.
Oh, wow.
And it went until 2010, though. Then there was some budget cuts. So 4 years of gap in between. They started again 2014. Now it's still going on. So okay. It's not that bad.
So you
right
can
now.
See some variability even in that short time. And do you see like it's getting affected by climate change even in that short amount of years?
Kind of. I would say so. The area is, since I don't know if anybody knows Turkey that much, this is the northern part of Turkey where like near to Black Sea mm-hmm. a little bit, like Western Black Sea, let's say. It is not that variable. It is variable from season to season, but through years, it is a little bit more stable than the others. It's always kind of a little bit more rainy, a little bit more humid, but also like there's snow. So from winter to summer, it changes a lot. But through the years, I don't think it will change that fast yet. But maybe if we have another 10 years of data, then we will see a little bit more variation. That's what I'm believing in.
Let's hope they
especially
get
for some like other species like lynx, for example, because mm-hmm. we don't have so much data on, so we have a really huge error margin for their results, and that will become a little bit more accurate if we had more sure. data.
So out of all of your field work but also desk work and coding work, what is like one single small piece of tech that has made your life easier, that like is the best piece of tech that you've been using in your career?
Supercomputer.
Supercomputer?
Yeah, I mean the cloud system, supercomputer system from university, which allows you to work with really big models that your current laptops cannot really they can work, but they cannot have that memory or that CPU. I think that made my life super easier.
Yeah. So you basically have your data set in the supercomputer cloud and you send commands so that it does the computing in there and then it sends you.
That can happen. I mean, there are variations of it, but what I'm doing, yeah. I mean, I'm cleaning all the data in my own computer mm-hmm. that does not require so much power. And then I'm writing the model also in my computer to try if it works or not. Then if I'm sure it works and if the model is doing what I need to do, then I'm putting it on to the supercomputer and basically run for it longer times, like minimum, like not longer times, but more iterations in Bayesian, we'll say that, more times it's running and again and again, it's learning from itself. Yeah.
How long does it take to run?
Depends on the model again. So the single species from large mammal analysis was taking minimum, one species was taking like 7 hours, and I analyzed like 8 species.
Dang.
Yeah. But it depends on the data again. If you have a little bit more data, it can also get more like longer, but also since it's going to learn more, it's going to like balance itself a little bit.
Sure.
For example, gray mouse lemur data has much more in detail and much more longer data. But since the model is a little bit more, right now the model is a little more simpler, it takes like 2.5 hours.
Hmm.
But as I'm going to put more coverage or more stuff in the model, it's going to take much more.
It's really cool.
I'm guessing. Yeah.
Do you know what kind of supercomputer it is or no?
No. It's like IT. So,
it's an IT computer.
A lot of CPUs, a lot of cores, I'm guessing. So yeah.
Great. That's awesome. Well, that's about our time. But thanks so much for volunteering to tell us about your science. I actually didn't even know all this stuff, so it's really interesting.
Yeah, thanks again for inviting me. That's perfect.
Thanks again to Dilsad Daktikin for coming on the show. You can find me on Twitter at Ackermans Nicole, and you can catch Scientists in Tech next week, where I talk to Grant Coffey about using drones to help survey ancient archaeological sites.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.